A Divine Comedy, A Good Omens Multivoice Podfic, written by Waywater and read by
Sky Asimaru
and Chop. Chapter 7. It's kind of a funny story. Summary. On the eve of the grand adventure to the end of the world comedy festival, Crowley tells Anathema a story. A Wednesday, about a month later.
You look like hell,
Anathema offered as she accepted the drink Crowley handed to her.
Yeah, and you look like a feminist bookshop threw up on a tarot deck. But I had the good graces not to fucking mention it, didn't I?
Crowley scowled as he flung himself down onto the sofa beside her, the ice cubes in his own cocktail clinking with malice. Anathema rolled her eyes at him.
Really? That's the best you've got today, Tony? Aww, I feel like hell, all right?
Anathema frowned, thought about that for a moment, and then reached across the sofa to flick Crowley firmly in the arm. He yelped.
Ah! What the fuck was that for?
You self-sabotaging menace. What is there to feel like hell about right now?
Aren't you the one always going on about the system? Isn't everything worth feeling awful about?
Ugh, focus, idiot! Aziraphale likes you. You like Aziraphale. You're going to the festival together? Everything's coming up Anthony J. Crowley.
It's not that simple.
No. It's exactly that simple. And that's what scares you.
Crowley didn't have a snappy retort for that. He swallowed a mouthful of liquor instead. Anathema looked at him with big, concerned eyes that he pretended to hate.
Explain it to me, Tony.
Let's get you caught up, dear hearts. This is how it went this time around. The graduation show happened, the offer of the festival was made, and Aziraphale and Crowley dove headfirst into the work ahead of them. If possible, they spent more time together than they had prior to the showcase. If they'd had the ability to examine setups and punchlines with a microscope, they perhaps might have done it. They talked about timing and about crowd work, and about which bow tie Aziraphale should wear on which night of the festival, and they talked animatedly with their hands and drank too much red wine until 3 in the morning, because why shouldn't they? They talked, and they talked, and they talked. They didn't talk about that. Crowley shrugged and made a non-committal sort of noise. You all know the one. Anathema sighed with disappointment and settled herself a little more deeply against the sofa. This was another new occurrence, seeing Anathema outside of Jasmine Cottage, inviting another human being to his flat. Proof that Anthony J. Crowley existed outside of the spotlight of a dingy comedy club. Even when he saw Aziraphale, they tended to end up at Aziraphale's place. Crowley liked that. It kept everything in perspective for him.
This is about him. You had your chance once, and you fucked it 9 ways to Sunday. You don't get to want another chance. Keep this about him, Crowley.
Sometimes Anathema dragged Newt along with her to Crowley's place, and the poor bastard never seemed to know what to say to Crowley. It was a little like they were still in class. but Newt's presence made Anathema even shinier than she naturally was. Sir Crowley made the politest small talk he knew how to make, and he silently thanked someone that someone decent was in Anathema's life.
What time do you leave tomorrow morning?
Bright and early. I'm sure Aziraphale's already awake and waiting on the train now, that absurd morning creature.
I'm sorry. Don't you mean that perfect morning creature with whom you're desperately in love?
Oh, fuck.
I speak Crowley, so I know that means yes. So, again, explain to me why this isn't as simple as you marching into that train station bright and early tomorrow morning and pulling that wonderful man into your skinny arms.
Crowley sipped his drink to stall and to consider friendship. To consider what it might mean to tell someone the entire truth and see if they stuck around anyway. He set his drink down on the coffee table. He removed his glasses. Oh, that's another thing that was happening now. He turned to his friend Anathema, and he told her a story.
I've never told you.
Crowley spoke slowly. He wondered if he'd ever gone so slowly at anything his entire life. But he had to get this right. He swallowed.
It's okay, Tony.
Tony.
Because they were friends.
I've never told you about how I made it to Hollywood in the first place.
And Crowley told her everything. Crowley told his friend about the first man he loved. About a kind, brown-eyed soul named Fred. About someone who truly loved him, and how that hadn't been enough. How Crowley had the chance to fly across the ocean and maybe become beloved by millions. How he'd seized at the chance immediately, leaving that kind, brown-eyed soul standing alone at a bar. As Crowley told his story, Anathema turned her face away from him, casting her eyes down to the coffee table.
What happened in Hollywood?
Crowley drew his fingers once through his hair before folding his arms tightly across his chest. He slouched back against the sofa, wishing it would come to life and swallow him whole.
No. You're not getting out of this that easy, Crowley. Tale as old as time, Device. Too many talented people, not enough opportunities. I got sent out on 6,000 auditions and no one knew what to do with me. Got a lot of comments about how weird and off-putting my eyes are. That's when I started wearing these.
He unfolded his arms and reached down to touch the damped glasses, fighting the urge to put them back on, to cover something of himself up.
So you came back?
I came back. Having been a comedian in Hollywood at all meant something back here. So landing the regular gig at the Ninth Circle was pretty easy.
Why are you telling me all of this?
Crowley wanted to set himself on fucking fire. Instead, he breathed.
Because you're my friend. Because I pretended to teach you anything. Because you deserve to know the truth. I'm sorry. I'm sorry every day. I'm sorry with every bloody scrap of my heart that's still in there somewhere.
Anathema drew in a low breath when Crowley finished the story.
What if that was it for me? I don't deserve him, Anathema. I don't deserve any of you.
When Anathema turned back to him, his heart twisted to see tears swimming in her eyes. She reached across the sofa and took his hands in hers.
Anthony J. Crowley.
Shut up.
You actual gigantic softy. Would you tell anyone else? Me? Newt? Haster? Leaguer? Aziraphale? That we only had one chance at being happy? That even our biggest mistakes should keep us from living the life we wanted? It isn't the same.
Crowley shook his head, tears crashing freely onto his trembling hands now.
Why isn't it the same?
Because you're good!
Crowley practically shouted, almost angry that she couldn't see what he could.
Even Haster and Leaguer, the damn bastards! I'm... Anathema, what I did was bad!
Oh, I agree. Massive fuck-up.
So, how can I possibly deserve someone like Aziraphale?
Anathema laughed, but it was a low, sad thing.
Crowley, we don't end up with people because we deserve them. You know what you deserve, and what Aziraphale deserves?
Crowley shook his head, feeling stupid.
Tell him what you told me. Tell him and let him decide. You're both big boys. He can handle it.
Crowley closed his eyes and remembered the first time he saw Aziraphale in the club. How light and soft he looked. Crowley thought of all the times he wanted to reach out and spirit Aziraphale away from any harm that could possibly befall him. As though she were reading his mind, Anathema squeezed Crowley's hand and said,
You're not protecting him by keeping this from him, Crowley. You're not protecting him by not giving him all of you. Especially not if that's what he wants.
She drew Crowley's hands up to her lips and kissed them softly. Crowley closed his eyes tightly, ashamed at his crying, ashamed at how quickly he was undone by any small act of tenderness.
Tony,
she said softly, rubbing the backs of his hands with her thumbs.
When you get on stage, the audience wants to learn something about you, right?
Yeah.
Tell him.
She gave his hands one final squeeze before getting to her feet.
I'm going to go now. You need to sober up and get ready for your early wake-up call, okay?
Okay.
You didn't teach us to be funny, Crowley.
Wow, thanks. I'm already fucking crying here.
You didn't teach us to be funny, you magnificent prick. You taught us to be brave.
Her eyes sparkled fiercely behind her glasses as she looked at him.
You can do this, Crowley.
She threw her arms around his neck and hugged him. He hugged her back tightly, burying his face in her hair and fighting the miserable howl threatening to escape his miserable body.
Thank you, Anathema.
Love you, Tony.
Love you too.
Call me when you get there, okay?
Okay.
And call me when you make out with him, okay?
Oh, Jesus Christ, get out!
Anathema hugged him one more time before walking out the front door of the flat. Crowley closed it behind her and then leaned his back against the door, sliding down it until he was sitting on the floor, a tangle of limbs and fucking feelings. Thursday morning, bright and fucking early. Crowley knocked at the door.
"Two shakes of a lamb's tail,"
came the frantic, nervous response from inside the house. Crowley rolled his eyes, unable to contain the grin that spread across his face.
"Angel, it's going to be a dark day in hell if I'm actually ready to go before you are."
The door swung open to reveal the most nervous Aziraphere that Crowley had ever seen. His eyes were big and wobbly. His cloud hair was, if possible, more of a mess than usual. His bow tie was askew. The house's little foyer, usually so tidy even in its impossible clutter, was strewn with various odds and ends. Crowley let out a low whistle at the side.
"Have you been up all night packing, Angel?"
"I'm afraid so."
Aziraphale's voice was higher pitched than usual. He wrung his hands together.
"I can't stop shaking the awful feeling that I'll forget something important."
"They do have shops in Edinburgh, Angel,"
Crowley reminded him as gently as possible.
"Oh, I suppose you're right,"
Aziraphale acknowledged, hands still clasped anxiously together at his middle. Crowley reached out and took those hands.
"Explain to me why this isn't as simple as you marching into that train station bright and early tomorrow morning and pulling that wonderful man into your skinny arms."
Crowley didn't pull Aziraphale into his arms. Not yet.
"Aziraphale."
Crowley squeezed Aziraphale's hands reassuringly the way that Anathema had squeezed his own the night before. Aziraphale looked at him with those rory blue eyes.
"It's all going to be fine, Angel."
Aziraphale huffed a little at that, mouth opening and closing, as he searched for what he wanted to say. Finally,
"Do you promise?"
Anthony J. Crowley didn't generally make promises. He was too accustomed to letting people down, and there were a lot of things he knew he couldn't promise Aziraphale. Couldn't promise him that he was ready to tell him the whole truth. Couldn't promise that Aziraphale wouldn't bomb at the festival. Couldn't promise him that the rest of the course of human history would leave him untouched and unharmed. So he chose his words as carefully as he ever had for any set in his entire life.
"I promise that I'll be with you every step of the way. How's that?"
Aziraphale rewarded his declaration with a shaky smile.
"Oh, well, that's enough, then."
Crowley wasn't certain that it was. He squeezed Aziraphale's hands one more time before releasing them.
"Come on, Angel. We've got a train to catch."
Next stop, the end of the world. To be continued in Chapter 8.